now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and our discussion with my guest, Anita Frazier, the author of The Natural Cat, The Comprehensive Guide to Optimum Care. I do have photographs on my website of cats that we are talking about that illustrate what we are discussing today. And so if you'd like to see some of those photos, all you need to do is click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the TalkZone.com home show page. And the phone lines are also open if you'd like to call in and ask Anita a question. That phone number is 888-463-6748. Again, that's 888. Go for it. On the photos that we're referring to, I have a picture of the bag of the lactated saline solution that is used for administering fluids to cats that are suffering dehydration from a number of diseases. And I actually wound up using this myself at home, Anita, when my cat was diagnosed with some kidney disease. And I learned that this is not hard to do from you, and it was exceedingly easy, and I felt so good helping my cat myself. But what I was surprised about, referring back to some of the commercial cat food, is that we are learning there are many diseases, unfortunately, that are rather linked to some of what we're feeding our cats. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Why, sure. I congratulate you for using the subcutaneous hydration. That makes the difference in a cat with kidney disease, or diabetes, hyperthyroidism. It makes the difference between the cat being ill and knowing it and feeling bad, and the cat not realizing they are ill because they feel so good. It really gives months and often years of happy, carefree life to a cat who is sick.
In my case with Willie, it added years.
Sure, yeah. Now, what was your question?
The question was, I know you've talked about there are some five major diseases that sometimes are associated with some of the common practices that, of feeding our cats.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the use of raw food, the holistic vets now want everybody to go on raw food to bolster the immune system. Inadvertently, they noticed that all of the cats who were suffering from kidney disease suddenly got better. The old way of taking care of kidney disease, the old-fashioned way, was the kidney's job is to process proteins, excess proteins, out of the body. So let's give them a diet that doesn't have excess protein, that has the minimum amount of protein and the rest is carbohydrate. Well, what happened was that cats really do need protein, they even more than dogs do, and you got all these kidney cats that were very skinny and they looked sick and they didn't feel well and it didn't do very well with them. When they put them on raw food, raw meat, they could feed them 75-80% meat, and they started to put on weight.
Sure.
And they felt terrific, and they had more energy, and they were more resistant to disease. They were doing it because they wanted them more resistant to disease, but they found out that the kidneys could handle high meat food if the meat was raw. So why do you suppose that was? It was because it's more digestible and assimilable. Remember I said that heating changes the protein and fat molecule?
Mm-hmm.
Was not heated.
All right.
It was the original, normal, natural protein and fat molecule. And the cat utilized it. It didn't have to be sent through the kidneys to be processed out.
And, of course, because the cats in the wild aren't eating cooked food. And I love that you actually talk a lot in your book about a lot of the answers come from the cats themselves. If you just really focus on the cat. And of course, cats don't cook their food, you know, in the wild. So the cat in itself has illuminates really the right thing to do, doesn't it?
That's true. Yes. I learned everything really from the cats because there wasn't anybody to teach me back then in the beginning. I listened to the cats and looked at the cats, and that was my main source of information, especially with the grooming.
Yes, because, and I love this, because obviously you know that there has been a business of yours, acting as a groomer, and you talk a lot in your book and have a wonderful chapter about the real proper ways to groom, and maybe if we have some time, we'll go to that. I know there's a couple things that really helped me a lot that I'm going to want to go into, and one of them will be, you know, playing with your cat, how to do it. But I see we have a caller on the line right now. It's Lisa from New York City. Go ahead, Lisa. What is your question for Anitra?
I have a question, Anitra. First of all, it's an honor to hear you on the radio. I've heard so much about you and read your book.
Well, thank you, Lisa.
I have a 10-year-old Maine Coon who I followed your book's advice. I do not feed them during the day, but she appears to eat so quickly at night, being hungry when I come home, that she sometimes vomits her food. What should I do?
Oh, Lisa, yeah, that's a common problem. The easiest thing to do is when you feed her on a dinner plate. Put the food on the dinner plate and spread it around like peanut butter on a sliced bread. And that way, when she licks the food, she can't wolf it down so easily. She has to work her way all around the plate.
Why do cats throw up? I said, why do cats throw up in that way? They eat too quickly?
Yes, from wolfing too quickly. Cats' stomachs are extremely sensitive, and throwing up is not that unusual a thing for a cat. There are many instances where the cat is supposed to throw up if they eat something that's not good for them, if they swallow too much fur. They're supposed to throw up fur balls. They're not supposed to pass it out with a stool. They're supposed to throw them up. So throwing up is something that cats do very easily.
All right, and so that's a great idea that you physically prevent the cat from wolfing the food down.
Yeah.
That's great. How does that sound to you, Lisa?
I'll start doing it tonight. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for your call, Lisa.
That was a very good question, Lisa.
Yes, and that's something I didn't know about. I think that would be helpful for a lot of people. So picture number 8 shows what we all do, and I used to make this mistake all the time when I played with my cat. You know, if I don't have a toy and the cat is looking so cute and adorable, you know, I want that touch with the cat. You know, I would wiggle my fingers or I'd start, you know, playing with it, and the cat would do exactly what we're seeing, you know, kind of grab my hand with its front claws and start batting at it with the back claws, which is so common. Anitra, why do you talk about that one should never play with bare hands with your cat?
Okay. When cats are little kittens, they are taught by their mother how to play without doing harm. Because cats will play all their lives long together. And so they have to know how to play without harming each other, or we'd have a disappearing species there. Cats' minds are simple. They're like children under the age of 3. If you do not want the cat to do something, then never, never allow the cat to do it. You don't want the cat to scratch and play rough and bite human skin.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you never, ever allow the cat to use teeth or claws on human skin. You may say, well, it's all right. I don't mind if she scratches me. Well, what if a child comes over to visit who doesn't know? Don't you ever have friends coming in who may not know a lot about cats, and suddenly the cat grabs them on the hand and makes a scratch? You don't want that to happen.
Right.
So the rule is this. Always have at least 2 feet, 24 inches, between your hand and the cat's mouth if you are playing. If it is a play is catch and kill. If you are playing, have the toy on the end of a cord, or have the toy like on the end of a fishing pole, or take the ball and throw it across the floor. You teach the cat that hands are for love and care and feeling good and calm times. Play is for a toy, something that you can use your teeth and your claws on.
That makes total sense. And if it's not too late ever to start doing that, even if, let's say, you have a cat that for years you've been playing with your hands, you can start that now?
That problem is often presented to me. Oh, he's always done it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my husband has always played with him like that. His hands are always a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Now the children are coming to visit. Start wherever you are. Wherever you are at that moment, that's when you start. And if it happens, if there's a slip and the cat does bring the claws out, don't pull away. Prey pulls away. You push towards the cat. You unhook claws by taking the paw and pushing the claw forward, because the claws are hooking around back.
Yes.
You push forward. You push yourself towards the cat. Even if you're in a situation, sometimes it happens, you get into a situation where a cat is angry,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly turns and starts biting or something. Push towards, because it will confuse them like crazy. It will immediately break the emotional chain of events. They don't know what in the world to do. They're used to, if I use my claws, whatever I'm using my claws on pulls away, tries to get away.
Sure.
You don't do that. You push towards, and they'll say, what?
Well, you know, and that's great advice, and I can see that would be so important to teach the children, you know, that play with the cats, and it'll take a while to, you know, get accustomed to that. But I think once, let's say, a child, instead of that knee-jerk reaction to pull away, which sometimes doesn't work so good, because I've, you know, when I made the mistake, Willie would kind of come with me. You know, I'd be dragging Willie with me, you know, with the claws wrapped around. But once we learn that the hurt will stop as you push in towards the cat, I think, you know, even children could learn that. Speaking of petting and playing, here's something that happened with me with Willie that I found out what it was about in your book also. And I think a lot of people don't know about this. So here's the situation. You're petting your cat, you know, everything's very loving, it's purring, you feel good, it feels good, or you're playing and everything's happy, and in one instant everything changes, and all of a sudden it's like you've got this snarling lion on your hands. And I've got pictures of this. I actually put a lion up there, you know, a sweet cat, you know, one photo, and then a snarling lion. And if you want to see those photos, you know, you can click on the purple Look While You Listen button to see those. We're looking at pictures 9 or 10. But Anitra, what is that, where you've got this sweet, you know, little creature one minute, and the next you got this, like, snarling lion on your hands?
I'll tell you, the first time I was ever bitten, very early in my career, that is how I got bitten. The cat was sitting next to me, and I was stroking the cat, and suddenly he swished around, grabbed me with his claws, and bit. It's called overstimulation biting. So you say, well, I was petting. I wasn't petting hard. Every cat has a different threshold of sensitivity. You know what the threshold of pain is? Well, there's another kind of threshold of sensitivity. When a cat can be enjoying something, but if you build it up past his threshold, his mind, emotions can't handle it, and he finds himself in a mental region that is very scary of, I don't know how to handle this. And so it is a type of fear biting. The way you can get cats that have a very low threshold, things like vaccines will make a low threshold of sensitivity. Chemical preservatives in food, sugar, salt in food, many illnesses. I have a cat right now little 3.5-legged cat with his front paws declawed, who was given away because he was too needy. He wanted always to be rubbing up against his owner, sitting in their lap and purring, and they didn't have time for him. He came to me a very needy cat, and he had this problem. What I had to do was I had to start with just eye contact and a loving voice, staying far away from the cat, and then working it up so that many, many times a day I would contact him or lightly stroke him for no more than 5 seconds. And when we built up to 15 seconds, was a big deal.
Sure, yeah.
At this point, he sits with me all evening. The other cats, he's not even jealous of the other cats anymore. It took months and months for this poor little guy. He was just too needy. He was starved, starved for affection.
And so you had to reduce that sensitivity.
I had to go very slowly. There are things you can do that don't involve touching. You can do, because the cats are so, all cats are so sensitive. When you speak, an interspecies communicator once said, when you're trying to communicate with the cat, you must include your appropriate emotion, whatever emotion you're using. Emotion is like a stamp that makes the letter go. You can write a great letter. If you don't have a stamp, it won't go. You can say lovely words to your cat. If you don't have the emotion, the cat won't get it.
Because they're very sensitive and they can pick up on those emotions.
Yes. So you can do that. You can do, you asked once about the cat kiss.
Okay, and you know what, though, Anita? We're going to talk about that in a minute, but I want to make sure I don't lose we have a caller, Dan, from Brooklyn on the phone. So let's take that call. Dan, what would you like to ask Anita?
Hi, Anita. It is also a pleasure to hear you on the radio, and I have your book, and it's been a great source of information.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Oh, absolutely. I'm curious because I feed my cat the recipe from your book, the I'll Do Anything for My Cat recipe, raw beef.
Yes.
And that's been for about as long as I've had her, about the last 6 months. And she loves it. However, I've noticed that sometimes she doesn't finish all of her food. I do remove food after if she doesn't finish in 30 minutes. Sometimes she sucks it right up, and sometimes she only eats about half or maybe a little less than half, and it seems to go for a spurt for about 2-3 days when she does that. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's anything that I should be concerned about with that.
I know. When that will frequently happen, and I bet it worries you. You think you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I wonder if she's not feeling well.
Or there's something wrong with the cat. Every day is different. And one thing that I always have to prepare people for is when you improve the nutrition, if you're making your own food, it is the most digestible, assimilable food that you can give your cat. So your cat isn't going to want quite as much as they used to have to eat in order to get all the nutrients they need. They're getting the nutrients they need much more easily, so they'll eat a bit less. So everything you're doing is right. You just say, okay, the food was there. She had plenty of time, and she's finished. Take away the food. That's exactly right.
Okay, so if she hasn't finished but she's had her fill, then no reason to be concerned?
No reason to be concerned at all. You know what I do? Whenever I'm concerned about, I see a symptom, like, for example, if I see that one cat has some diarrhea, I say, I get concerned, but then I say, wait a minute, let me watch this particular cat and see if I can see any other symptoms or if this is just a little one-time physical adjustment her body is making. So when she doesn't eat, you say to yourself, let me just make sure, is she perching in the same places or did she suddenly change and start hiding? What about her stool? What about her urine? Is that continuing the same? And that will reassure you.
Okay. Since you mentioned stool, can I ask one question about that?
Sure, go ahead, Dan.
Is there a regular interval that cats, I mean, do they do it, all cats have a bowel movement every day, or is it irregular? Or her stool is very consistent when it's in the litter pan, but she doesn't do it every day.
Okay. I prefer to have the cat should pass a stool once a day. Passing a stool twice a day, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's probably not going to be twice a day every day. Skipping a day, there's nothing wrong with that, but you do perk up your awareness and keep your eyes open. Try to see that it doesn't happen too often, that there's a day skipped. The reason you want a stool every day is because you want to get rid of the garbage. You don't want that waste products in there that where germs can form. And to make a good place for germs to grow. There are things, little things you can do to, if your cat is not passing a stool every day. There's a product called psyllium husk powder that you can get in the health food store. And it's just a food. Again, it's not a chemical or anything. It's just a food. It's little husks that they grind up into a powder, and you can just put like an eighth of a teaspoon of psyllium husk into the food once a day. But if you use the psyllium husk, the only caution is be sure to add extra water. I would add an extra 2 teaspoons of water to the food. Mix it up good. And then keep your eyes open. See what did that do to the texture of the stool. You may say, oh, I think that's too much. I'm going to go down to a 16th of a teaspoon of psyllium. Or you might say, well, it's better, but not good enough. Maybe I'll use almost a quarter teaspoon. You're the one that's there. You're the expert. If it's your cat, you're the expert, and you're the one who can tell best of all. You can feel free to give me a call. The number is on the website. It's in the book. I'll give it here if Susan would like me to. And I can give you more help on a telephone consultation.
All right. Well, that's great advice. And thank you for your call, Dan. It is time to take a short break. We'll be back right after this.